Accession number 30907, Reel 3.
I left the Vanguard in October 54, went back to Dryad, but I was an RP3. Ah, here we are. I was recommended to do an RP2 course now.
Right.
So I left the Vanguard and went to HMS Dryad again for an RP2 course.
Right.
And that was April 55 when I was rated Able Seaman RP2.
And you would have been in Dryad for how long on this period?
That would be from November up to November 54 up to April 55. May 55.
Yes.
That's when I was back in Dryad on my RP2 course.
Right. So, after Dryad?
After Dryad, back into barracks for a short period. Oh, went May till August. I remember that. May 55 to August 55. And I think that was the days when I volunteered to go to Earl's Court to be a gatekeeper for the Royal Tournament. Yes, I remember that. Anything to volunteer to get ahead of sweeping the streets in or Stephen the roads up in Victory Barracks or HMS Nelson, as they called it in those days.
And after I then
joined HMS Saints, a battle class destroyer, with Captain, who's now passed away, who was retired as an admiral, Arthur Allison Fitzroy Talbot.
Right.
Super ship, yes. Super captain.
And you joined her where?
I joined her in Portsmouth,
right.
Saints.
And where were you off to?
Off to Malta for 9 months.
Right, off. So the Mediterranean fleet, is that correct?
Yeah, joined the Mediterranean, yes.
Now, just going back to the Vanguard before we really get into the Saints, yes. I'd like to know something about the discipline on board. What was the structure? Who ran the discipline? I assume you had somebody called a Master Arms. And tell me about that side of it.
Yeah, well, obviously there was a Master Arms. He had people working for him, regulating petty officers. Might have been a lead patrolman on board as well. But I never got too involved with that part of it because I seemed to keep my nose clean, didn't get involved in any punishment, etc. Apart from dropping a name, I dropped a paintbrush over the side.
Yeah.
And I remember slight misdemeanour. I dropped my paintbrush and I had the petty officer said, "Oh, you'll see the officer watch for this." So I went down as a defaulter before the officer watch for losing one of her manager's paintbrushes. It seems to see. Now, would you like to take my punishment or see the commander? "I'll take your punishment, sir." Right. The freezers on board needed defrosting. So here's a scraper. I went there for about 12 hours, I think. But I had brakes, of course, if it was cold down there. They gave me a duffel coat. They were very good. And I had to scrape all the ice off. That was for losing a paintbrush. But that was the only time. Right. That didn't involve the commander. Yeah. It didn't involve the captain or anything like that.
Did you have any cells on board?
Oh, yes, yes. On the Vanguard we did, yes. And I think other ships use them as well. If a minesweeper or some smaller ship wanted the facility of a cell overnight, I'm sure they'd be brought on board the Vanguard. We had plenty of space.
Okay. I asked a question about discipline because when you went on the Saints, what was the sort of discipline set up there?
It would appear to be relaxed, but there's still, we never had a Master Arms, never had an regulating petty officer, we had a coxswain. And the coxswain was in charge of all that side of it, yes.
Right. You said happy ship again?
Oh, yes. The captain, as I say, he's retired now, but he's now passed away, Arthur Allison, if it's all Talbot. We used to take his car to sea, and you couldn't use the after turret because the car was in the way. But that's the sort of navy we had in those days. We went around the Mediterranean doing lots and lots of exercises, and the captain decided, or we decided for him, take the car, sir. So we hoist it on board, the crew hoist it on board, put it on the gun deck when we visited somewhere in France or somewhere in Italy, Sicily, all these places. We'd get a dockyard crane. If there wasn't one, we'd do it by hand. We'd build a little derrick and get the thing on the jetty. He had his own car there. Right. You imagine today's Navy doing that sort of thing. We couldn't do it anyway. We've got too many missiles around it.
How many ships' companies did you have?
Down to getting small numbers again now. 400, 500, if that, yeah. Yes. Perhaps I over-exaggerated slightly, but it was, a very happy ship.
Yes. And sailing around the
Mediterranean, and we got some super. We went to the Cannes or Cannes Film Festival. Now, as I discussed earlier on, we had the same requirements or regulations regarding who's going to remain on duty. Four watches on board, first and second starboard and first and center port. Three of those were ashore. That left one first and starboard, should we say, left on board. So many seamen, so many engineers, etc., etc. And we're anchored off of Cannes. All this crew went ashore, if possible, to go and see people like Diana Dawes. They're all at the film festival. They want to go and see all the big stars. And it got a bit choppy. The divisional officer, or the duty officer that day, okay then, the another incident aboard HMS Saint was we had some wonderful cruises around the Mediterranean, and one port of call was the film festival at Cannes. It was a lovely day when we anchored, and the decision was that three quarters of the ship's company could go ashore, hopefully to meet up with some of the film stars of the day, and a quarter of the ship's company were left on board. That worked very well, and it's worked very well on many occasions. However, on this particular occasion, when all the crew were ashore, the wind got up and it got a bit choppy, and a boat, the ship's boat, was at the ship's boom, and it started rocking around a bit. So I and my chum, I call him Frenchie, that's what he's always known as, decided to, if we had permission, to take the motorboat ashore, which was banging around on the boom, leave it overnight, and we of course would stay with it to make sure all was well. We saw the duty officer, who was Lieutenant Neil Durden Smith, and Lieutenant Durden Smith said, good idea, off you go then, come back by 6 o'clock in the morning, or earlier if you can, but I want you back here by 6, depending on what the weather conditions. So off we went, into the yacht harbour in Cannes, with these magnificent yachts parked alongside a jetty we found, and we were well entertained by a lot of French and other mariners who had their yachts in the harbour, with the beer and sandwiches of super evening we had. And then by 6 o'clock, it was calm, quite calm again. So we took the boat back. So all was well. Boat was not damaged in any way whatsoever. That's just a small incident of what happened on there. Another incident at Gaunt Saints was we were in Cyprus now. And there's a leading seaman on board. I won't mention his name because I know he's still around. But he was towed ashore by the motorboat to load up with potatoes. I was on a bridge at the time looking through the binoculars. I was supposed to be working, polishing a bright brick there. But however, we saw our whaler ashore being loaded up with potatoes, and it was getting lower and lower in the water. Then the putt-putt, or the motorboat, came along and towed it back towards the ship with all these potatoes on board the whaler. It was getting lower in the water, and they went glug, glug, glug. All these potato sacks were trying to float in the water. The boat went down below, was just about gunwales under. However, they managed to rescue that one, but lost all the potatoes. And again, an incident. It was humorous at the time, but obviously wasn't very humorous when a captain saw the leading hand in charge of whaler for overloading the boat. However, that was a small incident which I remember, and it was, at the time, I say, quite humorous.
So your responsibilities on the Saints was what?
Well, I was seaman. I was the forecastle division again. I like working on the forecastle, and an anchor and cables party. When the ship was at anchor, I'd be helping the people to let the anchor go, and helping, of course, bring it back in their board, back it back into the ship again, the anchor. The other duties, of course, when we're at sea, I was on watch in the operations room, you know, as I was now an RP2. And I was in charge of the watch as an able seaman, RP2. There's lots of other incidents happened, but I think the two in my which stand in my memory quite clearly are the incident of the motorboat or the whaler sinking, and of course when we took the motorboat ashore, my chum and I, and had a super evening ashore at the film festival.
So, did you bring the Saints back to the UK?
Yes, we did. The Saints came back to the UK on August 56. And then, unbeknown to us, the captain cleared lower deck. In other words, all the crew went onto the upper deck. And the captain said, by the way, crew, we're going to change ships. Sorry, this is the Saints, yes. We're going to change ships. We're going to the HMS Armada, which was another battle-class destroyer. And on so August 56, we all transferred to the Armada. And Armada, again, went back to Malta, as we did have a...
And where was the where did the transfer take place?
Portsmouth. The ship, Saints came back to
Portsmouth. So you sailed the Saints back to Portsmouth.
Yeah, and we transferred over to Armada.
The ship. Yeah, yes. And then straight out again?
Yes, well, not straight out, but I think there's a few days here. However, we went back out on the 18th of August to the... well, I joined the ship on the 18th of August, and not somewhere that we sailed. However, we went back to Sleema, and shortly afterwards, on arrival, the Suez crisis blew up. And we were all told not to write home and say where we're going, but I think you all know we're going back to Suez, because there's lots of problems down there. And keep it to yourselves. I wrote to my wife at the time, remember this, and said to her, I met Sue Eston in Valletta last night. And she wrote back and said, who's this Sue Eston? And I thought, oh, well, I tried to be clever, tell her where we were going, but it didn't work. But I think by then the press got hold of all the ships are going down to the Suez.
Can I just go back a little bit? You mentioned your wife. What ship were you on when you got married? How did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in Reading, and we always have a slight dispute over this. I say it was in a local pub because I was with my chum who went in there, and she was there with her friend. But she says no, it was in the dance hall in Reading. So
and this, what year would this be?
Oh, this is going to be about 54.
Okay.
I met the wife when I was on Vanguard, and we got engaged when I was on the Saints.
Right.
And got married on the Victorious, which I haven't come to yet. However, that's it. So 54 I met her.
Right. And you got married where?
58. In Reading.
Right.
In Reading, yes.
Okay. And so when you went off, she remained in Reading, did she?
Yes. Then once, well, I'm trying to think when she came down. No, she came down to Portsmouth when I was on Victorious, which is the next ship I'm going to talk about, yes.
Okay. So we're back down the Med now. What happened next?
Well, I say the Suez business. By then, the sort of the duration out in the Mediterranean was coming to an end, so the ship came back home again. That's Armada. Another incident I can recall on the Armada is that one of our squadron ships was HMS St. Kitts, and on the St. Kitts on the mainmast, there was a bullcock, highly polished, and it was always on display. And there's always someone up the mainmast polishing the bullcock. It transpired that this owner of this bullcock was an able seaman, a three-badge able seaman, George Parker, I think his name was. And he always maintained that Admiral Louis Mountbatten gave him this bullcock on one occasion and said, you have my permission. And please tell the captain of your future ships that you have my permission to put this bullcock on the mast and keep it highly polished, which he did. Yes. So going back to Armada, we brought the ship home from the Mediterranean to Portsmouth Harbour on the 15th of December, 56. And I think I'm correct in saying that as on arrival at Spithead, it was very foggy, and the harbour was reputed to be closing down shortly. Captain said, right, off we go, weigh anchor, which we did, and we brought the ship in a very fair, bad, foggy conditions, but with the use of his radar, etc., there was no problems, and we went alongside. I left the Armada on the 19th of March and went back into HMS Victory and stayed there for a matter of about 3 months, during which time... No, longer than 3 months, sorry, about 6 months, during which time I completed a leading seaman course at Victoria Barracks. I'm now up to when I joined HMS Victorious, still as naval seaman, RP2, on the 14th of January 1958.
So how did you find the Victorious? Was it a good ship, happy ship?
Yeah, well, it was at the time a most modern ship. That great big radar L is like a searchlight at the front for those who have seen the Victorious or saw the Victorious, which has now been scrapped. A big radar aerial at the front, like a searchlight, as I say. And it was the envy of a lot of maritime countries, especially America. We went to America to show this off to them, and they were very impressed. It was all computerized. Everything was done by computer. And
she had a fairly extensive refit for
10 years.
10 years.
She had a 10-year refit. And what I should have said, on the day we recommissioned, that was the 14th of January 1958, we had to muster in Royal Naval Barracks, HMS Victory, and Admiral Louis Mountbatten came and addressed us all, and someone, and I say many, many people in that drill shed, someone dropped a stink bomb on the floor, on the deck. So someone trod on it. Now, the Admiral realised what was going on, because people were putting as many strange faces, but he said, come forward, my men, come forward. And so we had to stand in this horrible stink whilst he addressed us. And it was well known that people would say to you, do you carry nuclear weapons? And we were told, we had to reply, yes, we are fitted for, but as regards do we carry them at the moment, that is none of your business. So that was the end of that story. But we did carry nuclear weapons.
How many ships company would you have had on
there? Oh, yeah, we're talking over 1,000 now, aren't we? Yes, you've got, once all the squadrons are on board, because of course when we commissioned it, the squadrons were not on board. All the Sea Vixens and whatever, Scimitars, all these aircraft types were on board. We're not on board down at Yeovilton, but once we had commissioned, got to sea, did our trials, then they all came on board.
And where were you would have picked them up? They would have landed.
They would have landed on the ship somewhere in the Solent, yes. And we had piston aircraft, Sky Raiders, we had the helicopters, Wessex threes, all on board.
So once you'd had all the squadrons on board, where did you go then?
Well, off to America, show the Americans our new system. Yes. Which I've already said, they were most impressed with this, and the back to Portsmouth, back to the Mediterranean, exercises in the Mediterranean, etc. Where else did we go to? I can't recall offhand, but certainly it was a happy ship. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of cruising around, but not for long periods. We did not go to the Mediterranean for long periods at that stage.
Was the routine on a large ship like that different than the
yes,
small
I
ship?
Mean, when we the lighters came alongside, there was no smoking throughout the ship, for example, because it's all of the very high volatile gas, petrol for the aircraft, etc., fuel for the aircraft. So there's no smoking, for example. But we had bunks. All this, I was able to see at the time, we all had bunks. Now, they were portable ones. They were taken down 7 or 8, 7:30 in the morning, put into special racks, and then they go to the mess deck, which you were on, or the mess you were in, plenty of space. But come 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the evening, put them back up again.
How old were you when you were on the Victorious?
Oh, how old? Let me see. I was born in 34. 4 plus 5... about 25.
So at what stage did you first got your tot? How old were you when you
were 18 tot? Of course. Sorry, 20. So that'd be 66.
Yes. And what ship would you have been on?
My first ship for 66 would have been the Victorious. 66. If I got my times right here, born in 34. Yeah, I recall now my tot of rum, I first drew that when I was aboard HMS Vanguard at 20 years of age.
Right. So tell me something about the routine of drawing your tot. How did it work?
Well, as a rating, it's what they call a 2-in-1 mixture. It's 1/8 of a pint of neat rum mixed with 2/8 of a pint of fresh water in a big barrel, and had the Queen... God bless her, on the side of the barrel in brass plates and brass numbers and letters. And a person called a rum bosun would go down to the appropriate place at just before midday and collect the rations for the mess. So if it was 20 men in the mess who were entitled to draw their rum, you get, he'd draw 20 tots, bring it back, and then he put it into a tumbler glass for you to consume at the time.
And that was two parts water?
Two parts water, one part rum.
Right.
That's for ratings. It changes when you become petty officer status.
What happens then?
Well, what happens as a petty officer, you do not have the water. You add your own if you wish to, in your privacy of your own mess. But it's actually given to you as a neat tot of rum.
Right. Okay. So still
and
one
most
eight.
People did actually
yes.
put down in one.
Right. Okay. And you would have got that at the age of 20?
Age 20.
Was there any drunkenness on board?
Yes. Everyone had been warned time and time again that birthdays... It's a very difficult time for rum because you're very tempted to say to your mate, who've been mates for perhaps a number of years, it's your birthday, many happy returns day, have a sip of my rum, which might turn into gulping your rum down. Not all of it, but most of it. Plus his own tot. He could be a bit unsteady on his feet after tot time. If he went actually foolish and became absolutely paralytic, then, of course, it would be a serious offence, and he would obviously see the captain as a defaulter eventually. But if you were a little bit unsteady, well, the duty officers or duty petty officers or chief petty officers would use their initiative and say, look, don't be so damn stupid when you had too much rum. Go and get your head down, and then we'll leave it at that. On the understanding, you use this incident as an example not to do it again. That normally worked.
Do you think it was a good thing that rum ration was stopped in the Navy?
Well, I had retired when it had stopped, or just about to retire when it stopped, plus I'd been promoted, and officers do not have rum.
Yeah.
But it was that era when so many changes, duty-free cigarettes had gone, rum has gone, ships were not doing so many world cruises as they all wish. As you join the Navy, you want to see the world, and a lot of that had been restricted because of costs, etc.
So back in the Victorious, you visited yes. America.
Yes.
And
Mediterranean.
Yes. Successful visit in America.
Yes. Oh, yes, very successful, yes, yes. The other interesting thing about Victorious is I note that on the 10th of May, 1958, I was promoted to leading seaman, as an acting leading seaman. Then you do that for 1 year, and you go back in a year's time and see the captain to be promoted leading seaman. It's been confirmed you're a leading seaman.
So how did your responsibilities alter once you're a leading seaman?
Well, you still remain normally in the same mess. You're all able seamen, perhaps there's one leading seaman in the mess, but there's all able seamen, or ordinary seamen, and as well. And you're now in a position where you've got to start taking charge. You don't do cook of the mess anymore. You organise a roster or rota for people to become cook of the mess, to prepare the food, take it to the galley if that's requirements. And people come off, haven't had too much alcohol. You'd be invited to look after, make sure he's okay. You probably delegate that task to someone else, but in the main, you are responsible for him overnight if someone's had too much alcohol in the previous evening.
What was your responsibilities on the Victorious when the aircraft were flying?
When they were flying, I was in the operations room. Dependent, I was tracking them on the radar. I wasn't personally talking to them at that stage, but you might be sitting alongside the officer who was controlling them, keeping the, as I said, it's all computerised, keeping the computer up to date, what height you are, is that, how far the supposed enemy aircraft were, etc. It's all dialed into the computer. And, of course, the controller of that particular aircraft knows exactly where the so-called enemy aircraft are and would direct him to do an interception.
Can you remember the name of the captain of the Victorious?
Oh, yes, the Victorious was... who do we have? I've got it here somewhere. Charles Coke was the first captain. Then Captain Bray Nichols. I think both of these gentlemen were made admirals eventually.
Yeah. Right, so you toured around the Mediterranean and returned to the UK.
That is correct, yes. And then we turned back to the UK.
And again, the routine of having all your family waiting on the jetty.
That's all, yes. Same procedure. Yeah, it still happens today.
Large ship.
For the ships that came back, yes.
So you left Victorious and...
I went back to Dryad for a short spell. And during that time, I actually did a petty officer's course.
Right.
And passed a petty officer. And in those days, once you would pass for petty officer, you did a leadership course at HMS Royal Arthur in Wiltshire. And I went down to Royal Arthur for a month or so in June and July 1960. In fact, July 1960,
yeah.
I was there for a month.
Right.
Still as a leading seaman, but passed for petty officer.
Right. Did you find it beneficial to go down there?
Yeah, it was good fun. I learned a lot down there because you go trekking in the Welsh mountains, and it's not really my scene, trekking, but still, you had to do it, and all the class had to do it, and each one in turn was deeded off as the class leader going through the mountains. And the person who you probably would say, he'd never make a good leader, it normally came out tops. They really were good people.
And this was a pure naval establishment?
Oh, yes, that's my school, Arthur, yes.
Who ran it? Who were the...
As a commander, but I don't think
instructors
I,
or
well, we had a lieutenant commander in charge of our class, but I can't remember the name of the captain of Royal Arthur.
So who ran the sort of day to day? Was it instructors?
We had instructors there. Oh yes, yes, and they came on the treks. I mean, they'd done it many times before.
Right. So was that a relaxed routine there? Did you find Royal Arthur?
I wouldn't say it was relaxed. It was because all of you were making damn sure you passed it. Because if you failed a leadership course, it might prevent you becoming a petty officer in due course if you failed the course. So everyone passed. But you had to give a talk on a particular subject of your choice for 20 minutes or so. And we had some interesting talks. But they were, I can't remember what they were now. I spoke about the radar branch, and there's no real hardships doing research, because I was I was part of the radar branch anyway. So, but others did other.
So after Corsham, what next?
After Corsham, then it's back to Dryad IC. Then in January 61, I joined the Belfast.
Belfast was what?
She was a cruiser. She was already out in the Far East, and we were due to fly out. All the crew, new crew, due to fly out. A pre-party already flown out there to make some arrangements. But however, the bulk arrived on the Belfast. According to this, the 26th of January 1961.
So you flew out. So where did you fly from, and what sort of aircraft was it?
I mean, it was a jet aircraft. Now, where did we fly from? It wasn't Heathrow or anything like that. I think Stansted. I really can't remember.
Bryce Norton.
Bryce Norton. No, it wasn't Bryce Norton. I can't remember. Perhaps it was, but I don't remember. I remember it was a jet aircraft.
Yeah.
And we all flew out there and joined the ship in Singapore.